my goodness. I'm super excited about today's guest because we have the one and only Ashley Vercher coming on the show today to talk all about This Is Me Now, a Jennifer Lopez love story, as she likes to call it. Man, oh man, we get to get into the nitty gritty of what it's like working with this icon.
Yeah, and she shares some great behind-the-scenes stories of what J-Lo's really like on set. And is she collaborative? Is she welcoming? Or is she a diva? She tells us everything, and she doesn't hold back. But she also goes into how she got started in the industry, how she wants to keep going, and where she sees herself going in the future. And just her whole path was very inspiring. And throughout this entire interview, guys, she has the most infectious smile and just overjoyed feeling of, like, she just loves what she does, and you can't help but just be captivated by it and inspired by it. So it's a really great interview. I can't wait for everybody to hear it.
That's right. Well, that's a little bit later on the show. Now let's get a little crazy. Hello everyone. So you want to start a podcast but have no idea where to start? Well, Crazy Ant Media is here to help you. We want to assist you finding your VFE. What's VFE, you ask? Well, that is your voice, your format, and your equipment. These are the three biggest essentials you need to start your podcast. All those hours watching nonstop YouTube videos or all those random website links, those are done. Just hop on a Zoom call with us and we'll talk about everything you need to know to create your own podcast and find your voice. Plus, we will send you home with a 12-page packet over everything we just discussed. It's very in-depth. It is definitely a must-need while trying to start your first podcast. Contact us at info@crazyantmedia.com today so that you can start finding your podcast voice for tomorrow.
What's up, guys? Oh my goodness. Episode 254 of ItCaf Podcast. Woo. And you know your host with the most, myself, J-Lo Fantastic, and the one and only Mal.
What's up?
Man, oh man. I'm super excited about this episode, but just a reminder, after this episode, we will be taking a couple of weeks off because I'm getting married next week, literally 1 week away from today of this recording. It will be happening. I'll be walking down the aisle at the time that we normally record an episode.
It's true. It's. I can't believe it's already here. It seems like it just like it was forever ago with the engagement, but then not. It seems like it was yesterday, and then it just like bam crept up. It's like, woo, yeah. I'm excited, and we've even got a little bit in the show later on with our top five that kind of like talks about it and everything. I know you've got to be just a bundle of, like, I'm an emotional roller coaster. I just don't even know. It's everything, my man. I can't even imagine you. I am happy. I'm sad. I'm anxious. I'm nervous. I'm calm. I'm reflective. I'm like, every day it's like a different emotion that I'm going through walking this down, like, just thinking about it all. But it's gonna be amazing, man. It's gonna be amazing to walk her down the aisle and finally, like, you know, just have you join the family officially. And it's gonna be an amazing thing, man. It's gonna be an amazing thing
for sure. And I'm super excited too, because, you know, with emotions about the wedding coming up, I did record a spontaneous episode of Everything's Okay. So be sure to be watching out for that next Wednesday, noon p.m. Eastern time. Yes. So, I mean, it's a short one. It's like 20 minutes long, nothing too crazy, but it gives you a little bit of a rundown of what I've been dealing with emotionally, what's been going on as far as the wedding planning process, and a couple of different things. But I was excited to do that. And it's different. It's not video. I was just out on a morning walk and reflecting about everything, and I was like, you know what, I want to get this on recording. So that's what I did. I got it on recording. So
yeah,
I'm super excited for everybody to hear that. Like I said, next Wednesday, noon Eastern time. But I'm super excited today to talk about everything, because of course we're going to be reviewing the Oscars, man.
Yes.
Man, oh man. I mean, a lot of good things, some bad. A lot of predictable things, though. I mean, let's be honest about it. But before we deep dive into that,
Of course, for all you new listeners, thank you for listening. And for all you old listeners, thank you for returning and supporting us. We appreciate it. Here at ItCap Podcast, we are here to lend the helping hand to all the up-and-comers trying to break into the entertainment industry and those who love entertainment news. That's why you got to listen to the show. That's why you got to leave a comment below and tell us what you actually think about the show, because leaving a rating on the podcast actually helps the podcast get seen by more people. And this podcast is, you know, the latest and greatest industry news, interviews, and conversations from your favorite celebrity guests, and then the fun stuff like top five segments and like box office and all the good stuff. But I'm super excited to deep dive into it. But I mean, this past week I've been trying to finish up Avatar the Last Airbender. I've got like two episodes to go. But I did just start Guy Ritchie's The Gentleman series on Netflix. I've been really sticking with Netflix recently.
Yeah,
I'm just loving it right now. I'm loving it. I think it's hilarious. It's action-packed, kind of. But I'm just, you know, I'm trying to just keep myself mentally honed in for the wedding.
I feel you. So Masters of the Air is getting ready to wrap up. It's only got a couple more episodes left. And I, you know me, I'm like, no, I have to have 75 different things I'm watching. So I jumped on a new one as well as Shogun. And oh my God, I'm just loving Shogun. But yesterday I jumped on The Girls on the Bus. We've been talking about that on this show ever since they first announced it with the casting and all the different stuff that was going on. Loved it. Melissa Benoist is just phenomenal, and I've always been a fan of hers. I mean, obviously Supergirl and stuff like that, but this character is just amazing, and this story, yeah, this is a good one. If you guys want to check it out, it's on Max. It's based on a book that's based on a real person, so, and Melissa Benoist's character is that person. She's also the executive producer and creator of the show and the showrunner, so that she had plenty of guidance to keep her on track playing her. But it's basically about four very different journalists, two on one side, two on the other, left and right, covering a presidential campaign, and they're on the bus touring, going, you know, with the candidates around the, and yeah, it's just, I don't want to give too much away because there's some stuff that you know, you gotta go, oh shit. So, but definitely, I'm enjoying that one, and you know me, I'm a political junkie, and like, so it was fun. It's really good. But yeah, that's the one I've been watching lately. I jumped on that. Girls on the Bus. Check it out on Max, y'all.
Nice. Yes, be sure to check all of those things out. And before we dive into the Oscar talk, of course, be sure to head over to our website, www.crazyantmedia.com, where you can start rocking the latest and greatest Crazy Ant Media gear. We've got it hanging up. We got it representing right here. But yes, man, oh man, like I said, that's why you got to follow us at J. Logan Austin and at Crazy Ant CEO, Crazy Ant Media, and ItCap Podcast, so you know when the latest merchandise promo is available.
Facts.
So be sure to check that out. But of course, like I said, we're going to be talking all about the Oscars, the wins, the losses, the snubs, the flubs, all the fun things. 96th Oscars. So really cool. But this 2024 Academy Awards, honoring the best films of the previous year, of course, arrived at a tumultuous moment for Hollywood, which didn't have a whole lot to celebrate over the past 6 months.
Facts.
Because of the strikes. You know that all of the labor disputes leading with actors and writers unions at a standoff that resulted in two costly strikes, not just one, that shut down the entire film production industry. Now, a big part of the debate centered on how streaming revolutions that changed how movies and shows are being made and distributed has also disrupted the way that the creative community profits from its work. Now, striking workers argued that the royalties they earned when their movies appear on Netflix, Prime Video, Apple TV Plus, and other streamer players, in comparison to what they make from home entertainment platforms and cable licensing, and in turn, improves their livelihoods. Now, the shift to streaming has been crazy in a bunch of other ways as well. Hollywood companies in the last 5 years invested considerably in launching their own in-house challengers to Netflix. Of course, we've been seeing them like Disney Plus pop up, Paramount Plus, Peacock, or Max, and a couple of others as well. You know that. I'm sure you're subscribed. However, Wall Street has become increasingly skeptical about the economics of streaming and is concerned that these companies have yet to demonstrate that they can show that they can even be profitable from these things. They sent the share prices of Disney, Warner Brothers, Discovery, and other major media companies tumbling, now setting off a fresh wave of cutbacks and layoffs. We reported about that every single week on the show. So here we're going to get into it.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, and now with the strikes, we weren't even sure we were going to get the Oscars this year because we weren't sure if they were allowed to. And speaking of the Oscars, they've been suffering from declining ratings, you guys know, and have also faced questions about their relevance and do we even need them anymore? Well, the past couple of years, thank goodness, has bucked that trend, with this year's ceremony drawing 19.5 million viewers on ABC Sunday night and a 3.8 rating in the adults 18 to 49 demographic, which is the key demo that everybody wants. Now, by comparison, the 2023 telecast drew 18.8 million viewers and a 4.0 rating when people tuned in to watch Everything Everywhere All at Once sweep the major prizes. Now, that was a bump from the 16.62 million viewers of the 2022 show, but altogether, this year, last year, and 2022, it's a far cry from the record 57.25 million viewers who witnessed Titanic capture Best Picture all the way back in 1998. Now, that does mean, though, this year, however, the show was up by 4% in total viewers, but down 5% in the key demo. It should also be noted, though, that this year started an hour earlier than it has in years past. Still, the 2024 telecast was the most watched Oscar since 2020 and marked the third consecutive year, as I just said, of viewership growth. Now, the 2021 telecast, which was heavily impacted by COVID-19, drew an all-time low of 10.4 million viewers. It rebounded the following year, but it only makes sense that it was low because of COVID. I think 19.5 million is impressive considering for the majority of the time leading up to it, nobody even knew if it was going to happen. Now, it was all kind of thrown together at the very end going, oh, strikes are over. They can promote the movies. Oh, shit. And they had to get it all together to get it out there. So I think it's an impressive number. And overall, I thought the show was really good. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it continuing to see some growth. I think we need to. It is relevant still. People questioning the relevance. It is relevant. It's Hollywood's biggest night. It's how we, you know, yeah, you can't tell me it's not relevant. Of course, it's still relevant.
And we all know the night saw Oppenheimer reign supreme with the hit biopic taking home 7 awards, including Best Picture, Best Director for Christopher Nolan, and Best Actor for Cillian Murphy. Robert Downey Jr. also won in Best Supporting Role for his work in the film. Now, elsewhere during the night, Emma Stone won her second Oscar of her career for Poor Things, while Divine Joy Randolph won Best Supporting Actress for The Holdovers, which there was some controversy literally a day before the Oscars even came out. So it was good to see that none of it, you know, spilled over into the Oscars. But voting was already locked in by that point, so that wouldn't have changed at all. But both Martin Scorsese's Killers of the Flower Moon and Bradley Cooper's Maestro failed to pick up any wins. And Barbie was shut out for most of the categories in which it was nominated, except for Best Original Song. With that win, Billie Eilish and Phineas made history, becoming the youngest two-time Oscar recipients at her age of 22, and he's just a little bit older than that. And after winning for Barbie, a ballad, What Was I Made For?, she co-wrote with her brother, of course, like I said, Phineas. The pair previously won for pinning the theme of 2021's James Bond's No Time to Die. So yes. I'm happy to see that for them. They're killing it.
They are killing it. And speaking of Barbie, Ryan Gosling also killed it. He brought down the house with his performance of I'm Just Ken. Gosling, who was nominated for Best Supporting Actor for playing Ken in the smash hit film, was joined on stage by an army of dancers that included fellow Kens Simia Liu, Nkuku Gatwa, Kingsley Ben-Adir, and Scott Evans, as well as Mark Ronson and guitar legend Slash, and Wolfie Van Halen was on there too. A lot of people aren't talking about that, but he was up there killing it as well on stage. On the other end of the age divide, you had youngest Hayao Miyazaki became the oldest winner of Best Animated Feature for The Boy and the Heron. The 83-year-old Japanese animation maestro previously won for 2002's Spirited Away. So 22... 83. That's like, I mean, you know, you can't say that they're not keeping it diverse with age groups. I mean, they're killing it with age groups.
That's true. And something a little off book, I saw that Simu Liu actually had a torn ACL during his performance.
Yeah.
So, I mean, kudos for him for sticking it out. You definitely couldn't tell. You definitely couldn't tell.
I also saw, too, that it was Ryan Gosling made it very clear the pressure of what was expected. He knew. And he worked with them, collaborated with them, said, I want to do it whole Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend Marilyn Monroe tribute. I want to go all pink. And he said, I know you guys have seating arrangements. I know you do this. I need all of my girls up front because I plan on being in their face and interacting with them. And he wasn't just talking about his Barbie girls. He was talking about Emily Blunt too. He was like, I need all my girls because I'm gonna be doing it. So I love that though. I love that he knew the pressure that was going to come from that because they probably knew that Barbie wasn't going to win a lot. And so he knew that, you know, he had to deliver on Barbie. And he did not fail. I mean, it was the performance of the night, in my opinion. Billy and Phineas were fantastic, and yay that they won. But this thing was just over the top, full on Hollywood, you know, and I loved it. I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, completely agree. But I mean, this year's ceremony wasn't without any controversy, though. Many viewers and those in the audience were taken aback by Al Pacino awkwardly presenting the Best Picture category.
Facts.
Now, Pacino, who won the Academy Award for Best Actor in Scent of a Woman, did not list any of this year's 10 nominees for Best Picture. Instead, he simply just opened the envelope and my eyes see Oppenheimer. He stated, quote, there seems to be some sort of controversy about my not mentioning every film by name last night. Before announcing the Best Picture Award, I just want to clear up that it was not my intention to omit them rather than a choice by the producers not to have them said again, since they were highlighted individually throughout the entire ceremony, which they were from start to finish. I was honored to be a part of the evening and chose to follow the way they wished their awards would be presented. I realize being nominated is a huge milestone in one's life, and not to be fully recognized is a little offensive and hurtful. I say this as someone who profoundly relates with filmmakers, actors, and producers, so I deeply empathize with those who have been slighted by this oversight, and it's why I felt necessary to make my own individual statement. Now, Oscar producer Molly McNeary said in an interview after the Oscars that it was a creative decision not to have Pacino list all 10 picture nominees, Best Picture nominees, before announcing the winner. The reason? The creative team was very worried that the show was going to go long. I mean, it always does, so whatever.
Yeah.
And the clip from the 10 Best Picture nominees has already been playing through the entire ceremony. Now, that part I get, but again, like, at the end, it seemed like they were trying to fill time. So, I mean, I feel like that was bullshit. Whatever.
Yeah, yeah. And newsflash, they always show all the clips from the Best Pictures. That's a thing they always do. So... And they still read the nominees. So I think that's just a BS excuse. I'm right there with you. I don't get it. Just another little controversy. The joke that Kimmel did, which was not a joke, reading Trump's tweet at him about how horrible the Oscars were. The producers also told him not to do it. No, we don't have time. Don't go out there and read it. And Kimmel said, I'm reading it. And it went over it massively well, obviously. The audience loved it. Everybody in attendance loved it. So there you go. Maybe we need to rethink about who produces it next year.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. All right. So all that, we got all that, right? And now, in case you missed any of it, let's dive into the list of all the winners. We're going to start off with Best Picture. And as we told you, Oppenheimer won for Best Picture. Of course, that goes to the producers. So that's Emma Thomas, Charles Roven, and Christopher Nolan himself.
So exciting, so exciting. Well, you mentioned him, best director himself, Christopher Nolan for Oppenheimer.
That's right. And, of course, actor in a leading role, Cillian Murphy for Oppenheimer.
That's right. Actress in a leading role, I think the biggest surprise of the evening
was
Emma Stone for Poor Things.
Yeah, right there with you. Actor in a supporting role, Robert Downey Jr. for Oppenheimer, and a great speech. I mean, this guy is the epitome of a success story for turning around your life and getting it done. Don't ever give up, y'all. He's the prime example of somebody that never gave up, did get his shit straight, and now he's got an Oscar.
Exactly. Second chances are true. Now, of course, actress in a supporting role, Divine Joy Randolph for The Holdovers. She gave an amazing speech, and I loved how she said, you know, thank you for seeing me. I thought that was beautiful.
Yes.
So I was happy to see that.
Yeah, another one just saying, hey, be yourself. What the other thing she said in there was that she thought for so long she needed to be someone else to be somebody, and then realized, I just need to be me. That's a beautiful thing. I'm right there with you. Adapted screenplay, American Fiction by Cord Jefferson, which was amazing. I loved that screenplay, and he was just showing everything. Sterling K. Brown, I think, was holding his Oscar more than he was. He kept looking, and he just gave it to him. He's like, here you go, my man. Just hold it. Just take it. That was a beautiful little thing between them two, but congrats to them. American Fiction, adapted screenplay.
Yes, for sure. Well, original screenplay went to Anatomy of a Fall, with Justine Triet and Arthur Harari.
There you go. Cinematography, no surprise here. I mean, they blew up a fucking bomb. Oppenheimer for Hoyt Van Hoytema.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
For original song, like we mentioned before, it was What Was I Made For? From Barbie, and music and lyrics by Billie Eilish and Finneas O'Connell.
Yes, there you go. Costume design, no surprise really with this one either. Poor Things by Holly Waddington. If you guys haven't seen that one, check it out.
Best sound went to The Zone of Interest, Taryn Willers and Joni Byrne.
Yes. Original score, Oppenheimer, by the guy that's just absolutely slaying it right now. He is everywhere, Ludwig Göransson. He was the winner, and he said it was a very special moment because his wife is a world-class violinist, and she was in the score. They built it around her, and so that's really cool. But yeah, that guy's killing it, man.
For sure. Well, live action short film goes to the only Oscar that Netflix won for the evening, The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar by Wes Anderson and Steve Rails.
Yes. Animated short film, War Is Over, inspired by the music of John and Yoko Ono. David Mullins and Brad Booker were behind that one.
Yeah, for sure. Well, documentary feature film went to 20 Days in Nepal. And this one, I mean, I don't even want to disrespect their name. So everybody who is attached to that, I mean, they did amazing. They had an amazing acceptance speech, so be sure to go back and watch that. It's a beautiful thing, man. It's a beautiful thing.
It really was. And documentary short film, speaking of violins, The Last Repair Shop by Ben Proudfoot and Chris Bowers. A beautiful film about music and the importance of music in this just old school repair shop that's keeping instruments in play. And just, yeah, wonderful film.
Most definitely. Well, international feature film went to The Zone of Interest, and that was out of the United Kingdom.
Yeah, and no surprise there, right? Like, that was up for Best Picture, and you knew if it wasn't going to win Best Picture, they were going to give it here. So
right.
No surprise there. Animated feature film, I think a lot of people were surprised. I think a lot of people were betting on the Spider-Man like it had won before, and it did not, as we told you up top. Oldest winner, Hayao Miyazaki, and I probably just butchered that, I'm sorry, and Toshiya Suzuki for The Boy and the Heron. So, yes, there you go.
Yeah. I have a prediction on that. I feel like with people knowing that the Spider-Man universe or that whole animated franchise is a trilogy,
they'll
probably come back and win the third one.
Yep.
So that makes sense. That makes sense.
Sound bad.
For makeup and hairstyling, this one was a surprise because I for sure thought this was going to Maestro. I thought it was going to be the only one Maestro won, but it went to Poor Things. Nadia Stacy, Mark Kohler, and Josh Weston.
Yeah, I was right there with you with Maestro until I watched Poor Things, and then this one made sense to me. It's creepy shit. That's all I'm saying, just some creepy shit. Same thing with this next one, why I wasn't surprised after watching it. Production design, Poor Things. James Price and Shona Heath, set direction by Zusa Mahalik? I'm going to go with that. Yeah, sure. Yeah. But yeah, for there sure. you go.
Film editing goes to Oppenheimer with Jennifer Lame, who also had an amazing speech. First time ever, I think, editing a feature film, if I'm not wrong, first time ever on this type of budget. That's for sure.
So yeah.
Congratulations to her.
And there you go, guys and gals out there. Pay attention. Hey, Christopher Nolan gave her a shot. That it just doesn't matter where you're at in your career, how young, how old, how much experience, not. You just need that shot and bam. Oscar winner.
Right.
Film editing. Oh, you just did that. Visual effects. Godzilla Minus One. Takashi Yamazaki. Kyoko Shibuya. Masaki Takahashi. And Tatsuji Nojima. That was pretty good.
You did pretty good.
I've been watching Shogun. It's in Japanese. They have subtitles. I have to kind of learn. It's just like, you know.
Yeah, for sure. I always feel like, you know, after the Oscars, it really sets a precedent of who's the biggest studio in Hollywood right now. And I definitely think it's Universal, man. They're on top of the world. And I definitely think, you know, Christopher Nolan, I think, will definitely bring his next project back to Universal. So that makes sense. But I feel like with all the turmoil at Disney right now, trying to figure their life out, figure out their succession, with Paramount trying to figure out if they want to sell or not, and then there's always shit hanging in the sidelines with Paramount as far as, like, accusations. That Nickelodeon dark documentary is about to come out, so that's going to be interesting. Sony, but, I mean, the biggest loss for this entire night was the streamers. The past couple of years, the streamers have been very prevalent at the Oscars. And like I said, the only Oscar that went to a streamer was that Henry Sugar one for Netflix.
Yeah.
I mean, they got nominated, but they really did not prevail this year.
No. And I think so to balance that and kind of to like go with where you were going with that, Universal, I think, was successful film-wise, because they did not do what all the other studios did, which was focus completely on the streamers and all the money and all the Tarkin and all the marketing. Universal stayed with films. Peacock is not the biggest. It's not the most, you know, they said, hey, we got Peacock. We're putting some cool stuff on there. Go see it if you want to, but we're a film studio. We're fucking Universal Pictures, and we're going to do films, and it seemed to work for them, you know? So, yeah, I think they just made it clear out of the get-go that, yeah, we have a streamer, but we know we can't compete with Netflix right now. We know we can't compete with all them. We're just going to do what we do with it, but we're not going to take away focus from our films because that's what our bread and butter is, and it worked for them. I mean, so... And look, I think, like we said when we were talking about the relevance, like you said, the past few years, it's been all about the streamers. And maybe the audiences weren't too fond of that. Maybe they were like, meh, you know, we don't want to know. Oscars are film, theaters, like, boom, give us film, theaters. We don't want to give a shit about streamers. So I think moving forward, you're going to see the studios, if they are films for their streamers, they're still going to get theatrical releases, and you're going to get a little bit of time with them in the theater so that we can still feel good about it at Oscar time, right? It's like, no, the only place I watched this was on Netflix. Yeah, I feel like if you're an Oscar person or you love it or you're entrenched in the history of it, you want to say you saw the film in a theater. It's kind of the whole thing, right? Like,
yeah, and I definitely feel like that had a hand in it with, you know, all of the winners this year.
Because for sure,
if y'all don't know, the people who vote on the awards are people who have won the awards in the past. So that's the way that you are able to do this. And I feel like Oscar winners are kind of getting tired of the streaming wards, right? Yeah. I feel like they're just getting a little sick of all of, I don't know. They do value that cinema. They do value that experience of going out to a theater. So yeah, I just feel like all of the Academy is just probably like, okay, we're getting a little tired of this.
Yeah.
You know, we're kind of ready to go back to what we're good at. And I definitely feel like that shows. Something else that's very interesting and another big loser is Warner Brothers Discovery, because Oppenheimer could have been at Warner Brothers, but during the pandemic, if you guys remember, they did that same day release stuff where they were releasing movies in theaters and on the streamer at the same time. And Christopher Nolan, Patty Jenkins, and a couple of other big filmmakers were like, nope, not doing that. Like, definitely not renewing my deal, Christopher Nolan, and definitely not happy with it, Patty Jenkins. So yeah, it's been crazy.
Well, and you know, they've been trying to mend that and get creators back and assure them that they're going to get theatrical releases, blah, blah, blah. But are they? I feel like they're making all these promises, but they might be full of shit because they're still bouncing back and forth. The whole Acme, you know, Roadrunner film or whatever that was supposed to, they were like shelved it, said it's never going to be seen. Then they said, oh no, wait a minute, it will be seen. We're going to release it. Oh no, no, we're not. We're going to sell it to somebody else. No, 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 we're going to release it. And now again, it's, we're not showing it. It's done. It's over. It's never going to happen. I'm like, so there's still some bullshit going on in there that I feel like if you're a creator, you got to be real careful if you want to make a deal with Warner Brothers. That's all I'm saying. I think, me personally, I think until Zasloff is gone, it's hit or miss. It's hit or miss. Yeah.
Well, I was just listening to another show that was talking about, like, maybe all of these deals that look very flashy, that are very icing on the cake for a sale. But, like, we've been talking about.
Yeah.
Like, it's possibly going to be like, look at all of these things that we have in development or pre-production that we're about to do, and look at all this potential money you can make, and then like, boom, gone. Like, I'm really worried about Warner Brothers, man. I feel like in 20 years, Warner Brothers may not be around, which is so sad to say.
Which,
but we'll see what happens.
Yeah. I mean, we start a crowdfunding campaign right now, because that's like one of the most historic studios in history. We can't just let that one die. We can't. Got to have a bunch of rich people form a group to be able to buy that thing off, because like that needs to exist, man. I can't imagine a Hollywood without the Warner Brothers. Like, exactly. That just, it's unfathomable to me. I just, no.
Well, let's see. Let's look it up right now, because we love looking up the stock. Right now, $8.54 a share.
I mean, that's that insane. Not insane? And I mean, Walt Disney's at 112, but they're all, Paramount's at $11.21. And I mean, it just, Sony's under 100, Lionsgate's at under 10. The entertainment stocks, like we said at the top of the show, not so good right now. But boy, if you're an investor, there's some time to jump on it. That's all I'm saying. Yeah. If you got some money.
That's for sure. Yeah. Warren Buffett, we know you like jumping on these different things. I know you just sold your Paramount stock. Where are you going next?
Yeah.
Where are you going next? I'm curious, too, because I think it's interesting. It's an interesting point of conversation. As a filmmaker who wants to stay with the stride of theatrical release, but also get seen by all the eyes that are streamers, what studio, I have two in particular, and I want to get your thoughts first before I say it, but what studio do you think you would want to go to for that double-edged sword?
So I think if you're looking for the most eyes that to see your project, I really do think that because this shareholder fight's going to end. It's going to be over. The shit's going to be taken care of and everything. I think that if you're wanting the most eyes, the two studios that you have to look at are currently Universal and Disney. I think that's where you're going to get the most. Disney, when they get their shit all together
Universal
and they get
for
past
streamer too? Because yeah, it's for both. You got to think about both. Like, I understand Disney, but Universal for
meaning most eyes all together, both.
All together.
Oh, yep. So then if for me, it's Disney and Paramount, hands down. Because, I mean, look, Paramount Plus is growing significantly. They are seeing a nice little surge in. And so I think that's where you're going to get. And Disney, in my opinion, is the go-to because not only do you have Disney Plus and Hulu, but they also highlight films on FX. They also make deals in collaboration with Apple because they are very tight with Apple. So you could see some films that might not show up on Disney platforms, but show up on Apple's streaming. So I think Disney's the go-to once they get the pelt shit out of the way. But then, yeah, if you're talking strictly theater and streamer. Paramount, I don't think, is in any danger of Paramount going away, even if they sell it off. They're talking about spinning off Paramount. So Paramount will exist. So, yeah, I think it's Disney and Paramount.
That's interesting. The only reason I would say no on Paramount is because of all the – is it going to get sold? My worry as a filmmaker would be, would your project get swept under the rug because they have so much other shit going on. That's my biggest thing. So for Disney, I can definitely see that because, I mean, Searchlight, obviously, Poor Things just won a whole bunch of awards at the Oscars, did very well. And, I mean, you do have Disney Plus with Hulu that is now a beta on Disney Plus. But I think Sony, Columbia Pictures, and Sony, because they have that deal with Netflix. So, I mean, you got to think about, you know, Bob Marley just came out. You got Ghostbusters Afterlife coming out. And you have, you have the Marvel stuff that doesn't necessarily do that well, but you still have the curious people who love everything Marvel who do that are attracted to those type of things. But yeah, I Sony and I say Apple just because they have the money and they are willing to just give you the money and then also give you that space to release it on Apple TV Plus. And theatrical, kind of like what they did with Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yeah.
But those are my two. Those are the two I would gear towards as far as like trying to think about most eyes in general as far as streaming and theatrical distribution.
Yeah. My only thing with Netflix is I think that Netflix is a bubble waiting to burst. I do. And I think that's why they keep making deals with Sony and like others, Warner Brothers giving them stuff that's now showing on Netflix and everything. They're trying to get back into that licensing game of getting other people's stuff because they know they're in trouble on their original stuff. And so I just think they've been at the top for so long and everybody's trying to emulate them. But as we know, Disney's going to pass them in total subscribers soon. And so I just feel like that's a bubble waiting to burst. I don't think they're going to go away. I think they're going to burst and going to have to rebuild. They're going to have to figure out, okay, we were the forefront. We were the leaders and everybody matched us. Now we got to change our shit. We got to get back to something else to make them chase us. And I think that's going to happen at some point.
I think that's what they're trying to do right now. That's why they're trying to figure out all of these live streaming stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, you had the Chris Rock live stand-up special.
Yep.
You had a couple of tennis events. You had some, like, obviously the SAG Awards. Different things like that. So I think they're trying to figure out live.
Exactly.
I think that's what they're thinking is going to keep them ahead. But I don't know. I mean, because the people are not interested in all of those things. They're interested in one or two of those things. But, I mean, the mass audience, I don't know. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. But, I heard those questions and I was like, I feel like this would be a good conversation to have. So, yeah, I mean, it's interesting to see where the industry is going. I definitely feel like, you know, like we talked about before, more filmmaker movies are coming and more theatrical releases are coming as well. So I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, me too.
Completely agree. Well, oh my goodness. Now it is time for the one and only Ashley Verscher to come on the show and get a little crazy with us. Talk about all about her time on set, helping young up-and-coming filmmakers trying to break into the entertainment industry, and so much more. I mean, she got to work with my name twin, J-Lo. So we're going to be talking all about that. And I'm just pumped, man. I think everybody's going to love this one.
Yeah, no, she's just, like I said, she's infectious and she's passionate about what she does. And anytime we talk to anybody like that, you just walk away with it with a sense of, I can do it. I can get in there. I can chase my dreams, no matter what the dreams are. And she's definitely inspiring like that. This is one that I think a lot of people are going to listen to and walk away and go, I'm going for it. I'm going to leap. I'm going to take the chance and I'm going to go for it. And I love those interviews.
For sure, for sure. Well, here she is.
Ashley Verscher, welcome inside the Crazy Ant Farm. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, we are living the dream, as always, and we are super excited to talk to you. I think this is going to be a really fun conversation. We have not just the fact that you got to work with J-Lo, right? And we're going to be talking about what that experience was like and the movie and everything. That's going to be awesome. But you're also a fellow filmmaker like us. We're filmmakers, and you've been on the short film circuit, and we know all about running the short film circuit. And I love, too, that we're going to dive into a little bit also later on your goal and your initiative to try to inspire women of color in the industry and get them going and kind of thing. We're all about a helping hand. This podcast is kind of geared towards helping people get into the industry and helping that hand and teaching and guiding what we know and sharing what we know. So we love fellow filmmakers that are out there making a difference like that and trying to do that. So that's awesome. So we've got so much to talk about. But what we like to do to kind of start it all off is just kind of do a little intro for anybody that might not be familiar with you. How did you get started? Was it something you kind of, I mean, California born, so it's the question comes, did you always know you wanted to be an actor, or did you kind of fall into it? How'd you get started?
I was always, I guess, a performer. I think that makes sense. I started playing the violin when I was 6, and I played that consistently for a very long time. And then eventually, you end up in the church choir. And then you also end up like doing church plays for like Christmas and Easter and things like that. I also ended up doing those types of things in the schools that I went to when I was in elementary school. And my dad is an artist of many things. So a visual artist and also was a singer. I don't know, there was a lot of music in the house I grew up in, and I think we were kind of like, me and my brother, quite musically inclined. So yeah, I think that's where it started. And then I really liked doing things as a kid. Like, I liked having things to do. And so putting me in orchestra and putting me in like youth symphonies or sending me to music camp and that sort of thing was really, really normal for me because it's what I was really asking for from my parents. And thank goodness they could do that and they could make those things happen. And then I think when I was in middle school, when I was in 7th grade, that was the first time I took a musical theater class. Mm. And that was great. That was really, really great. It was really surprising that it was even an option. I think so from then on, it was always like a little theater here and there. But I was like spread pretty thin because I wanted to do everything. So I was playing sports, doing music. Singing, playing the violin, all the things. And then eventually one day it came together after I was taking some classes at an extension program at UCLA, and they didn't have one of the classes I wanted to take, so I finally decided that I was just going to take an acting class because I've been wanting to do it for so long, but I had been so scared to do it. I don't know why, but I was really nervous. And then I took this class, and that was kind of it. Like, after like my first day, I was like, all right, this is what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna call my mom and tell her this is what I'm going to do for my life.
I love that, though. That's so beautiful because, you know, with being able to have the ability to try different things, it's very important to have a big support system around you. And it seems like you definitely had that with your family. And that's amazing because myself, I come from a very sports oriented background where my family, my brothers, my sisters, everybody just played sports. Nobody really ever gave much attention to the arts. So then when I got into high school, I was able to finally get on stage and finally start being able to put my creative brain to the test and be able to shed that layer of skin of anxiety, I guess you can. Well, not all of it, because it's still there. Let's be honest about it. But I mean, to be able to have that type of support, I feel like is very important, you know, with, you know, driving you to the practices, being able to pay for all of the different equipment, especially, you know, violins specifically are not cheap.
No, yeah.
I did not know how much money my parents spent on my violin lessons until I got to college. And I forgot why I wanted to take lessons with someone, but I wanted to work that muscle of what that is. And sure. I was like, oh my God. Actually, I'm going to have to call you back.
Did you acclimate real quick to the violin? Did you catch on, or were you one of those that, this sounds, and then you gradually got good, or like were you just naturally, I got this?
I mean, I think that particular kind, like a string instrument, is, I don't know, I think instruments can be challenging in general.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I can speak to some of them because I've messed around for different periods of time with different instruments, but no, I would say no, but not in a way that I feel like it wasn't something I could do.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Right,
I mean,
right.
It's like, I shouldn't say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. It's like when you have a young child in your life and they play basketball for the first time at, you know, maybe the age of 8 or something, like they've done their first basketball team, and you see them and you go, this is not for them.
Yeah. No, it's great that you said that, because that's exactly why I asked, because my daughter and his soon to be wife, she was about that age, 8, and she took up the violin. And listen, when it first started, I was like, I looked at her mom like, are we doing this? Are we sure this is good? Because it was rough. It was rough. Yeah. But then just all of a sudden, it clicked. And like, she caught me by surprise. One time she came in and I heard her and she literally brought me to tears, because the film that inspired me to become a filmmaker was the first Superman movie, Superman the movie, back way 78, right? And I walked in and she's playing the theme song, the John Williams theme song, and it was beautiful. And I'm like, it's worth everything. Keep playing. It was like spot on. But it took a while to get there. That's why I asked. Because
talented instrument. I mean, I think, you know, it's, I used to teach violin to like young, like elementary, middle school.
Yeah.
And, you know, you gotta be patient.
You gotta be patient. That's so true.
A lot of things they're trying to, it's also, you're trying to put a lot of things in your head at one time. Like, you're learning to read music, you're learning how to handle your bow, you're learning how to handle the fiddle, you're learning how all, like, what all the notes are on this instrument,
right,
are, you know, how to take care of it, how to, like, you're learning, like, rhythm and all that kind of stuff. You're learning all this at once, which I think it makes sense for you when you say, like, it clicks, because you're, it's like,
yeah, once you got it all, you're like, oh,
God.
Oh.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So I think my parents feel that way.
Exactly. So I got to ask, though, because you're lighting up talking about music, and you said when you took the acting class, you were like, this is it. Got bit by the bug. This, I'm calling mom. This is what I want to do. Did you see yourself always going towards the film television route, or were you Broadway? I'm musical. I can sing. I like to act. Do I want to go stage? Am I heading to New York? Or was that ever a consideration, or did you just kind of know it was going to go the other way?
I don't know if it was like a full consideration. You know, I think for me, when it came to really, I guess, making that choice, one, the in the beginning, like, that's why I think I say that I'm a performer. Because in the beginning, it was a lot more of that to me. You know, that was my experience. Like, I didn't experience a lot of these things as like an actor. You know, when I was in a school play or this, I never, we did like a number, the big market number from Oliver Twist when I was in middle school. Like, I never thought, oh, you're an actor or you're acting. I never thought of it that way. I always just thought of it from a performance perspective. Mm. And maybe because also I started out with music, playing the violin, you know, that I had this idea, you know, you're like, I have a concert, I have a performance, you know, that's what it was. That's what you
Yeah.
said. So I think I always thought about it that way. And then my first like professional acting job was at this small theater in Rock Island, Illinois. And it was a musical presentation show. So it was the Buddy Holly story. And I sang and danced and played the violin and acted in this show, which is probably why they booked me. why I got the part. I met the most incredibly talented musical theater actors, like when I did that. Well, and I should say actors who were really focused on musical theater. And I think that for me, that was the moment where I became very clear about really wanting to focus my energy on doing straight plays and to focus my energy on doing film and television. But I would do, you know, I would do anything in that world. You know, I enjoy all of it. It's all wonderful. You know, the first musical I think I fell in love with was Rent. You know,
Yes.
Obsessed, you know, and then I was a kid in California and they made Chicago into a movie and I was obsessed for an entire summer. That's the only thing I watched every day. And it was like the summer where I was old enough, I think, to be home alone.
Yeah.
So my parents would work and I would watch it every day. I actually got like a rug burn on my face because I tried to do a handstand. It was getting real in there, okay? I think that, you know, that exposure, like that bug really started kind of running through me. And I was very lucky, you know, my parents like took me to New York and stuff like that. And I was able to see like, Chicago, and Usher was in Chicago playing the lawyer when I saw it, like insane. So that, you know, it just kind of developed, but I think eventually, like I got very fixated and focused on plays, and I mean, their plays are like my favorite things to read.
Oh, for sure. Well, I can definitely tell in this 12-minute conversation that we've had so far that you're very much a people person, and that, you know, you very much leave your imprint on people who you come across. So, like us, you also have a drive to help up and coming filmmakers try to break into it. Where did that come from? Because, you know, the entertainment industry is kind of generalized by the outside people, the normies, as I like to call them, as self-centered, and everybody thinks we're, you know, very self-absorbed and always thinking about our image and all these different things. But we all know that we're not like that. But where did that passion come from specifically to help up and comers, you know, to break into it? Because it is very important to just take that first initial step, and not a lot of people know how. So where did that passion come from?
Yeah, you know, I think maybe the root of that, which is something I have thought about lately, is just a lot of it probably comes from my upbringing. My parents are very, very giving people, like very giving without expectation of anything in return kind of people. And I was really fortunate to, you know, be in like girl groups and like, you know, after school programs that were really centered around exactly what you're saying that I do, centered around advocating for young women and young Black girls. And so I think I grew up a lot around that. And then more specifically in terms of the business, once I realized that I needed to say out loud like the things that I wanted to do, and that there was real value in that and importance in that, that I think is when it started to click a little bit more, how I could help and be of service, you know. And so at that point, once I started saying out loud, you know, I'm really curious about producing, I'm curious. And then eventually being like, you know what, actually, like, I would love to direct in addition to acting. That would be really an exceptional experience, I think. Once that started to happen, I started getting opportunities that people were handing to me. You know, I started, and I was willing, you know, I was down. Like, I'm like, listen, I'll go run coffee. I'll, you know, I know that there was a project I worked on that I sat in the car for 2 hours to make sure we didn't get a parking ticket.
Wow. You
know? But, you know, honestly, like, I was not mad about it. No. I was so grateful to be a part of that film and to be like, yeah, I sat in the car for 2 hours, but also we shot for like a number of days and I was on set watching people work. I worked as a stand-in on set. You know, I worked as like head PA person or whatever on set, you know, all of these things. And so it was really all these great experiences that people gifted me, which really empowered me to make my own film. And I think throughout that whole process, like realizing that I could do that too, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the organizations that really inspired me is an organization called Made in Her Image.
Yep.
And yeah, it's a nonprofit organization based here and in Arizona. And I was just, I mean, if you just read the work that organization does, it's really, really seriously inspiring, you know, focusing on young women, girls, and non-binary youth of color, and like teaching them and empowering them to make their way through and in the film and media industry. So, you know, I think this is a long ass answer.
No, it's good.
We're here for it.
My upbringing really supports that. And mm-hmm. I've been so blessed that there's no way that I couldn't do that.
Mm. Well, there's so much to unpack there because everything that you said is so critically important. One, I love that you went into it knowing that, hey, I'm willing to run coffee. I'm willing to do whatever it takes because I think that, unfortunately, I think a lot of people that try to break into this industry are burdened with ego. And they can't get rid of the ego. I can't run coffee. I'm beneath, that's beneath me. I'm an actor. Or I can't. And they don't understand that the best film school is on set. You learn everything by being on set. And if you're not too proud to grab coffee or sit in a car or watch, you're going to get an amazing education on how to make movies if you're on set. So I love that you said that because I think a lot of people out there that want to get into the industry have to understand that. Get on a set, ask questions, pay attention, do what you got to do because that's how you're going to get there. I also love, I sat in the car for 2 hours just not get a ticket. When you're an indie filmmaker, especially on like short films and stuff, you wear 18,412 hats and you're probably sitting in the car not to get the ticket before you have to yell action because you're directing also. It's so crazy. But I love that.
The ticket is not in the budget, okay?
That's right. The ticket is not in the budget. That's right. That's the producer talking. You don't understand. If this gets towed,
no coffee tomorrow. Yeah.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So, and you've been successful though. Like Brief Exchanges. You wrote, directed, and acted in it. Which, when you're saying I'm gonna make a film, it's hard enough just to make the film. Then you say I'm gonna direct it, and I'm gonna act in it, and I'm gonna talk just a little bit about that process and congratulations because it did really well on the circuit. It won awards. Talk about that a little bit. Did you know going in that you were, I'm dead set, I'm doing all of these things? Or did it just kind of come to you and say, I know I want to act in it. Maybe I can find a director. I feel pretty comfortable that this is my story. Or were you like from start to finish, this is my baby and I'm doing it all?
I'm very sure about writing. Well, I wrote it. I'm like, that's how it happened. So there's no denying that. And then I was very sure about wanting to direct it. I really wanted to create my own opportunity for that.
Mm-hmm.
I had been gifted opportunities from other people, which was really wonderful to have that first sort of experience. But I was really in a place where I just felt like I really needed to just do it. Needed to do it. I wasn't going to go to film school. It's incredibly expensive. It makes you stutter. It takes a chunk of your life, and I'm an actor, and I'm like, that's a chunk that you're really, if you're trying to still actively act, I don't know about that's going to
happen.
And so those are some sacrifices that I don't think I was really willing to make when it all came down to it. So that was very clear. And then I talked to a lot of people about acting in the film. I talked to people who I knew who had done it successfully, who had written and directed or co-directed and had done it successfully. In my brain, I considered co-directing and eventually was like, no, that's not a thing that we're going to do. But it was really the conversations I had with people who were just like, you call for advice and you think it's going to be like a discussion and they're like, oh no, just do it.
Yeah.
Multiple people no, you should just do it. No, just do it. Just do it. Just do it. And I'm like,
I guess I should just do it.
And I just trusted them.
Yeah.
People I respected and I trusted them and I guess I trusted myself too. And then so that was kind of how that happened. I didn't intend to co-produce the film. That just happened. But I think those things very, very easily happen in an indie world. You just realize you've sent 75 emails and essentially you started producing.
That's right. Figure if I'm doing the work, I'm getting the title.
The work, then I think so, because like you said earlier, it's very difficult. It's a very challenging thing to do. I know people who've made their first film and it's a very good film and it did really well and they never want to do it again.
Right.
So all of that stuff comes, you're giving up a lot to do something. So, I think you have to step into all of that and own it.
Yeah, most definitely. Solid. And one of our favorite quotes is leap and let the net appear. So, I mean, that's definitely one of the things that, you know, if you're going to fall, you're going to fall, but you're going to have a learning experience. That's for sure. So, I mean, that's always very, very special. But I'm super excited because you are in Jennifer Lopez's 8 Mile, basically. This is me now.
That's a great way to describe that. That's
right.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. I do what I can.
How long did you work on that?
Listen, I had to make it perfect.
You had to.
Not a lot of people know. Well, people who listen to the podcast know, but not a lot of our guests know. My name is James Logan, so I have been also named J Lo.
Yes.
Just to shorten it down. So I'm very excited that you get to work with my name twin. And I mean, from what I've heard about this film, it was an amazing process. So talk about your part in it a little bit, and how, let's start at the very beginning. How did you even get a call for this part?
Yeah. You know, pretty traditionally, I got an audition. Nancy Nair is the casting director. So whoop, whoop, thank you.
Whoop, whoop.
Got a call for an audition. I did the audition. It was kind of a crazy day because I think it was in the middle of pilot season. And so there was a lot going on. Mm. And I was having a hard time finding a reader. And I called my friend and she was driving. I think she was driving to her grandmother's house. Pulled over on the side of the road.
Wow.
Was my reader with her, like, in her car.
Dedication.
Nice.
Yeah, like, that's the real one right there.
That's right.
And then, like, auditioned for a couple of different parts. And eventually got a call back pretty quickly, I believe. And then I found out I booked it, and I was like, oh shit, okay, like, great. And that's kind of how it all started. And then things, I think, moved pretty quickly after that. And we started filming, and yeah, it was great. I met Jennifer on the first day of set. She was lovely and really thoughtful, and shared with us her passion about this project and what this was, and really wanted to relay that to us so that we could assist in telling her story as best we could. It was great.
So, because for anybody who might not be familiar, it's called This Is Me Now, and it's basically like a fictionalized, not fictionalized version of her life, right? Like at the time she was dating Ben, is that right? Is it kind of that little section of her life that she's telling it at that point?
No, I think it's more about an overall, it's like, you know, it's called This Is Me Now, a love story. It's okay. A love story of her love life. It's the story of her love life. So I wouldn't say that it necessarily focuses on that particular period of time, because I think she said, like, everybody knows that story. It was very public.
Yeah.
Right.
She focuses, I think, more on the things around that people may not know, and her experiences and the ups and the downs and the discovery of how important self-love is and healing is, like healing of your inner child, and coupled with, you know, the trials and tribulations of love, and also trying to consistently believe that love exists for everyone and it can be everlasting, and it's available to all of us. We believe, you know, we hope.
Well, you nailed it right there, I think, because before we can have everlasting love, before we know that we're worthy of that, right, and that it can exist for everybody, self-love. You have to love yourself first, right? You have to figure that out, because you're not, in my opinion, I don't feel like a human being is capable of giving or receiving that type of love until they love themselves and work on the dark side and the shadows, and have to, like you said, heal and get to a point where you know you deserve that type of love and get that. So I'm so glad you brought that up, and I'm thrilled that they're doing a film that explores that. And she kind of, I love too that you said she talks about the ups and the downs and the highs and the lows and the tribulations, and because it's not easy. It's not, I can only imagine trying to have the life that she has and maintain the balance between a normal love life and being in a relationship and a marriage and all that, and then doing what she does, right? It's unreal. So I'm thrilled that she's doing this. And it's in correlation with a new album too, right? Like, isn't it?
It is. So the new album is also called This Is Me Now.
Yeah, okay.
So the album supports the project, and you know, it's a very fun project at the same time. You know, we talk a lot about love, but it's also really fun. You know, there's some incredible dancing in that project, lots of singing, her new music, which is just dope. And yeah, it's great. And I get to have the privilege of playing one of her best friends called the Idealist.
Uh-oh.
Also really fun because that character is so different from who I am.
So, I mean, talk about that experience a little bit, because with it being so different from who you are, do you get to play with different type of reactions to things? And in that moment that you're, you know, rehearsing or on set about to shoot, are you thinking about, okay, I would do this, but my character needs to do this. I need to portray that. So is it kind of like that dual threat, dual double-edged sword type of situation?
No, I think it's more about like preparation. I think all of that should hopefully be taken care of in preparation.
You would hope.
You're not like so worried about that while you're on set. That seems really stressful.
Yeah.
But I do think it's really fun to step into someone that's really just not like you, you know, and that an idealist is, you know, really believes in, you know, it's the romantic. And that's not really me.
I don't know. The shirt says different. You're like all Valentined up with the shirt.
I like romance, but I, you know, I'm not a romantic. And you know, I think romantics can be a little fantastical and thought, you know, hoping for what could or should and supposed to like what is.
Sure.
Which isn't necessarily me, but I think it's fun. I do think in terms of what you said, like the reactions I think are just so different. Like there's a scene in the film where there's a gun that drops to the floor, and like my character's reaction is not what my reaction was. My reaction would have been crazy. I would have lost my shit. But my character is just very like sure and like focused. So I think that part of it's just really fun because it's just so different. And I think, you know, that's sort of the fun of acting, is just stepping into somebody else's reality and, you know, letting the moment and everything just be true.
For sure. And sorry, Logan. Is she very structured? Is she like, how does she approach? Is she very like, you're locked in and this is what she wants? Or did you have some creative liberty with your character to be able to ad lib and play a little bit? I feel like she'd be open. That's just the vibe I get.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, like, we did a lot of improvisation on this project also, which is incredibly fun. She's really good at it. And it's she's funny. So it's a good time. I would say absolutely, definitely open. I think the folk, you know, the big thing is really making sure that we understand the overall story and
right.
What we're doing here for that, yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful. I love that. And I mean, it kind of leads into something new that we're trying in 2024 is our popcorn questions. Just some fun things to end up the interview. Definitely get to know you more, and our fans get to know you more. So we're very excited about it. And like I said, this leads right into the first one. What do you think was the funniest moment or most memorable moment on that set?
Oh, God. The most memorable moment was there's a scene where Jennifer throws like the bouquet over mm-hmm. the like a balcony at the wedding and reception, and one of my castmates is we're all standing there to catch it, and there's a bunch of people behind us, you know, and like this is really going down as if this were a real wedding. there's no plan necessarily for who to catch it. I think there has a plan, but this time my friend catches it, and it's the person who catches it in the film, my friend Brandon. Oh my God, we were so excited. Like, like the excitement that is on our faces are so, it's just so real because everyone was completely shocked that he caught it. And so it was just like, it was such a fun, beautiful moment. Like, and it's in the film, so it's so cool.
Oh, that's amazing. That's amazing. Okay, here's another one. And I'm curious because we heard all kinds of stuff earlier on in the interview. So I'm really curious about this one. If you could live in any film or television show, which one would it be and why?
Okay. Can I manipulate the show?
Sure. Sure. It's your show. You're in it now. Yeah, it's your life. Right. What you got?
About this, I'm like, Jesus. Okay. Let's just say the world's like all good. Like equality is for real and racism doesn't exist in this show.
Okay.
I would live in Downton Abbey.
Okay. All right.
Talk about class right there.
That's right. That's right.
I love that show. I've seen it too many times. I shouldn't say how many.
Yeah, no, that's not an answer I was expecting, but I love that. I love when they give us, when we get answers we don't expect. That's fantastic. That's a great answer. I
mean, it's so fun, like, because the show takes place over, like, a period of time, and the fashion just changes, and it's amazing, but then, like, right. Big, beautiful, like, ridiculous place that they live in, but, you know, we have to have equality.
And, yes, and yes.
Like, really, for this to be okay.
That's right. Like you said, we'll manipulate a little here, a little there. It'll be exactly. Perfect.
It's great. It's great. But we know you already have worked with some amazing people in your career. So this one's going to be interesting. If there's anyone else you would want to work with, who would it be?
Okay. Really want to work with Jeffrey Wright.
Yes.
With Sophie Okonade, I think is how I would pronounce her last name. And I really would love to work with Naomi Harris. I'd really love to work with Sally Richardson Whitfield as a director, and also with Gina Prince Blythewood as a director, and Regina King as a director. Okay.
Yeah. Well, it seems to me that you've thought about this a little bit. That was real quick. You're like, no, I got this person. I've been thinking about it for a while. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I respect each of these people immensely, and I really, really look up to them, like, wholeheartedly. Like, I look up to them and their work and their work ethic and, like, the things that they have done in the world of, like, art and filmmaking and theater. It's remarkable, and it's, you know, those things will matter forever. I really look up to Sally Richardson Whitfield because she started out as an actress and is transitioned into directing, and any show you've watched, she's directed on these shows.
Yeah.
It's incredible to see. I don't know how she did it. I'm like, if she listens to this, I would love to meet you, please, and just talk about all of that. But it's really impressive, and it's really, really inspiring to me.
Let's manifest that. Let's make that happen. We're going to make that happen for you. Just in this conversation that we're having, I can tell you that you're likely going to make all of that happen, because clearly you are that person and you deserve to have that happen and work with these people, because you're right there yourself. I'm sure after this interview, there's going to be plenty of people going, I want to work with her. I want to work with Ashley. So, all right, now it's time for the Barbara Walters moment. We got to hit you with a heavy question, okay? Like you know. If you could travel back in time, what would you tell your 10-year-old self?
You guys are gonna make me cry.
I knew it! Yeah! No.
You know, I would tell my 10-year-old self that you, like, just as you are enough.
Mm-hmm.
What I would tell myself.
Beautiful.
That's beautiful.
That is beautiful.
Right, I'm trying not to cry, so I can't say anything else.
It's okay. It's okay.
It's all good.
I promise you, if you do, though, we will, because you were emotional. Exactly. We'll cry, too. It's all good.
We have the mental health podcast as well, and we talk about a lot of stuff on there.
So, and we cry a lot.
To go back, listen to us cry to make you feel better. Like, it's fine. It's all good. That's so funny. And then the last one is, so far, are you happy with your career?
Oh, yeah, I am. You know, I feel like I don't, I think it's really hard to celebrate yourself sometimes.
It is.
And I think that idea of celebrating yourself is really very often just related to this idea of, like, tooting your own horn. But I think they're two different things. And also, I don't think there's anything wrong with either. But I try to celebrate myself, especially in this particular moment in this space and time. You know, this is a really hard business. Like, I watched a clip of, oh my God, I'm so embarrassed. I can't remember her name, but it's the woman in Game of Thrones who plays Daenerys.
Emma.
Clark?
Is that?
Yes.
Clark?
Yeah. I think it's Clark.
I watched the clip, and they asked her, like, what advice would you give somebody starting out in this business? And she said, are you sure?
Yeah. Yes.
That's exactly what I would say to somebody. And so I think, you know, with that being said, that should already tell you how hard it is, right?
Yeah.
The first question, like, nobody's like, oh, I want to be a doctor, and somebody, nobody goes, are you sure? Everyone goes, oh, that's great. Maybe people say, are you sure, when people say they want to be a lawyer, though.
Never know.
So I knew I was very sure about this choice, and I'm just really, really grateful that I've been so lucky to have all these experiences. You know, I remember when I was waiting a table in New York City. I used to work at this bar called Center Bar in Columbus Temple, and I was waiting at this table, and this man said to me, you know, you really should enjoy the journey. And out of, you know, just out of, like, not really knowing very much about me at all. And he said that to me, and I, like, never forgot it. And so I've really tried to do that. And I think in that is, like, gratitude, and also, like, celebrating yourself and feeling really good about all of the little accomplishments. I think all of them matter, man. If somebody emails you back, you should just, like, fold that idea up and put it in your pocket and save it for a rainy day, because that's an achievement.
Oh, absolutely. Love that. Literally my mug, enjoy the journey. It's literally what my mug says. You live by that. You enjoy the journey, no matter what, the ups, the downs, the goods, the bads, it's all part of it. It all makes it worth it. And man, I can't think of a better way to end it than that. Enjoy the journey. Listen, you have been an absolute gem. You've been amazing to talk to. And I think that, like I said, you've dropped so much valuable advice for people that are going to listen to this, and you're doing it the right way and you're seeing the success. And I think you're going to inspire a lot of people that listen to this. And the sky's the limit for you. I have no doubt that you are just going to continue to sail, and you are going to get everywhere you want to go. And it's just going to be an amazing thing for you. No doubt.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I want to see your films, because you guys send your filmmaking.
Yeah, yeah, you got it. We'll send you a link.
Yes, exactly, exactly. But you know, it's all about social media now, so where can people follow you?
Literally only on Instagram.
That's all good.
All good.
At Ashley Verscher, Verscher with a V. That's it, yeah.
All right,
fantastic. Fantastic. Well, listen, thank you again so much. Take care, and we'll be talking to you soon.
Thank you.
Oh boy, what a conversation. Man, oh man. It almost felt like, to all of the listeners out there, that we had a longer conversation after the interview than we did during the interview. It was so fun.
It really was. I think she nailed it when she said, I feel like I could talk to you guys forever. It's so true. I just felt like she was sitting down in the living room with us, and we were just chilling. And yeah, I mean, so inspiring, though, to hear her story. And she's got so much talent and so many different things she was trying to do, and to be able to just pull it all together and say, this is my focus, this is what I'm going to do, and then be able to excel the way that she has is so inspiring. And it's just, again, we talk about it all the time, but when you're doing it right, you see success. And she's clearly one of those that's doing it right. So, man.
Yes, exactly, exactly. Everybody be sure to keep an eye out for Jennifer Lopez's This Is Me Now. It's going to be on Amazon Prime, where you can find Ashley and a couple of other amazing, talented actors in that film. But Ashley, thank you again for coming on the show. Oh boy, oh boy. Now it is time for our top five segment, man. And like we teased at the top of the show, it is a week away from my wedding, from his daughter's wedding. It is crazy. I mean, it's been a 2-year engagement. We've been doing a lot of things, contemplating a lot of things, trying to put it all together. Like I said about 3 weeks ago, be sure to get a wedding planner, because planning your own wedding is very hard. Emily has done amazing with the help of, you know, her mother, Sharla, and her bride, maid of honor, Bailey. They've all three been killing it. So kudos to them. I've helped where I can, but I try to just, you know, tell me what to do and I got you.
Tell me
what to do and I got you. But this top five is special. It's going to be top five moments that we are looking forward to wedding weekend, because it's a whole freaking event, guys. It's not like the India Prince event that happened a couple weeks ago that had a concert. Rihanna was there, a whole bunch of celebrities. I think Jeff Bezos was there.
Yep.
Like, I mean, I wish I was invited to that shit. What the hell? Where was my invite? But yeah, I'm super excited about this, because, you know, we get to talk about personal stuff, and it's fun to talk about personal stuff sometimes on the podcast.
Yeah.
Number five for me goes to staying at this beautiful hotel down here in the area called the White House. And it's literally a White House. It looks like the freaking White House. But it's so historic. I guess even before Katrina, or was it Katrina that completely washed it away?
Oh, yeah. No, it was destroyed well before that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they completely rebuild it back up. And like, it's just this refound place that it's got like this 40s, 50s vibe to it. A lot of, there's an event down here called Cruising the Coast where a lot of classic antique cars come. So a lot of those come there and you get to some amazing pictures. But it's like, it's a bougie place. So I'm really excited to be able to just experience that and to be able to just be like, oh man, this is where we are. This is what we're doing. And to be able to sit back and reflect with my bride about everything that's going on. So I'm super excited about our weekend getaway at the White House Hotel.
Yeah, it was, for anybody who's ever been down in that area, Biloxi, Mississippi, and to Keesler Air Force Base, or you know what we're talking, it was an eyesore for decades. It was a completely demolished, massive hotel that was huge back in the early 50s and stuff. And nobody could afford to buy it. A couple of people tried, and then they went bankrupt trying to restructure it and rebuild it. And it just sat there literally for decades until finally somebody came along with enough money and enough to get it and restored it finally after decades, because it was just awful looking. You turn to go into Keesler and here's this just like, what the fuck is this doing here? It's like, but now you're like, it's beautiful. And you're right, when Cruising the Coast is there and you've got all the 50s and 60s cars out in front of it, it looks like you're driving up to some fancy hotel during the 50s in Hollywood. It's like, because they've got the palm trees and like, it's very Beverly Hills-esque when the cars are out there and everything. It's beautiful. So yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. For me, my number five is being able to see some old friends that I haven't seen in a really long time. A lot of old friends that are coming to the wedding that I haven't seen in a really long time are going to be there. So I'm super excited to be able to get together for such an event. And that's how we're going to see each other after we haven't seen each other for a long time, which is going to be really fun, because anytime that you can get together with old friends, it's awesome. But when you can get together with old friends for this type of an event, it's even more special and more awesome. And so I'm really looking forward to just seeing people that I haven't seen in a while and catching up, because it's going to be, you know, I'm going to need them there to hold me up and support me, because I'm just going to be a mess. So I'm glad I've got some old people that I can trust that like, okay, get it together, old man, get it up, you know. So it's going to be good. It's going to be good.
That's funny. That's funny. This is a personal conversation, so people are going to be like, what? But Derek and Jason, they were all a part of the same
family. Oh yeah, yeah. We all lived in that Carol Sue Square, my man. Like everybody, yeah. Nice. Yep. So oh yeah.
That'll be funny.
Yep.
Number four for me is like your number five, spending time with some close friends. Specifically, because everybody knows we just moved from North Carolina, where Dustin is still at, and we left a lot of friends up there. I made a lot of really close friends, so I'm really excited for them to come down and to be able to experience, you know, a little slower pace in life, because that's really what the South is. I keep telling everybody, hey, the day after the wedding, go to New Orleans. Like, I don't know when you're going to travel again, so just, it's an hour away, so be sure to check that out, because it's an amazing thing. But I feel like, you know, we're going to have such a tribe around us, and it's going to be like an amazing thing. And to see those people who we left 8 months ago, it's going to be special. It's going to be special. So yeah, number four for me, spending time with some close friends.
Well, mine is that same thing, but reversing it, because I haven't relocated down there yet. I will be soon, guys. I'll be down in Biloxi and back where I want to. It's going to be great. But I, on the other side, I still have friends and family down there that I haven't seen in a while. So I will be, unlike him who's going to be seeing people that are still up here, I will be seeing people that are still down there, family and friends. So I'm really looking forward to seeing the friends and family that I do have down there that I haven't seen in the last several months. So it's going to be really exciting. So old friends coming, current friends that are still there with family and everything. So it's just going to be a big old huge warm get-together fest of just, yeah, and I'm really looking forward to that whole aspect of the friends and family stuff. It's going to be amazing, man. It really is. My number four, spending time with family and friends.
That's right. And number three for me is spending time with a family that I haven't seen in a while since, because I'm sure a lot of people know, and if you are new to the podcast, I'm originally from Indiana, and a lot of my family is in Indiana or Ohio, and I haven't been back up to see them in quite some time. You know, we had the pandemic, and then, I mean, you know, money's tight, and I mean, people have day jobs, like, there's so much stuff going on, so it's hard to see family. So there's some family I haven't seen in, like, 6 or 7 years. Like, my dad's coming specifically, and I haven't seen him in, like, 5 years at least, I feel like. So, I mean, that's going to be really cool to be able to experience that, then to finally be able to meet my bride. Because my grandparents, you know, they were driving through North Carolina one time and we were able to have dinner and they were able to meet Emily. But nobody else on my extended family, as far as like my cousins, as far as my uncle, my aunt, even my dad and stepmother, they haven't been able to meet Emily yet. So I think that's going to be really special to finally put some name to some faces and yeah, see where I get the strong genes from. So that's going to be fun. Number three for me is spending time with some family.
Yeah. And that's kind of the same deal. There's a few people on our side that have not met you yet that are going to be there and finally get to meet you. So they hear all about you and you know, everybody. So that's going to be kind of cool. And that plays right into my number three. The one thing that I'm really excited about finally is just making it official. You have been family for 5 years now, 6 years now, easy. You know, yeah, I mean, it's not all about blood. Blood isn't what makes family. And for anybody who's been following us the whole time that we've been together doing what we do and all of our adventures and all of the different things, you know. Yeah, you know, I refer to Logan consistently and always as a son, a brother, a best friend, he's been family forever. But to officially make it family, official, you're actually, that's it, by law, legal, in-law, you're in there. That's going to be really special for me. I'm looking really forward to just kind of making it legit, making it like, you know, now when I call you my family, you are my family and, you know, legal. Everybody else can just like, you know, but because I mean, for me, it's always been that way, but now everybody else. So I'm really looking forward to that, man. It's just, it's going to be a really cool thing.
Well, for sure, for sure. Next time any of us are in the emergency room, I'll finally be able to go back.
Yes, like, exactly, you know? Exactly. And Jesus like Christ, that. We're all in the fucking emergency room all the time. And it says, fucking sucks, we can't go back. But now we literally will be able to, yeah.
Exactly, exactly.
It's sad that that is what we're excited about. It's like, we can go back in the emergency room now, yeah!
I'm so happy, so happy. Number two for me, I think is going to be a very special one, is going to be my dance with my mother. I think that's going to be really nice because, you know, to finally be able to, you know, just take some time out of the day, because Emily and I are going to be pulled every which way from so many people who we haven't seen. And, you know, we want to give time to so many different people. So it's going to be really hard to spend time with specific people. And I mean, that's just the way weddings go, sadly. But I think, you know, the mother-son dance is going to be very special because her and I have had this roller coaster of a bond. Growing up, we were never really that close. But then once I moved down here to the Gulf Coast area, our bond grew really tight and we became really close. I just had to get to adulthood apparently. But yeah, I just feel like, you know, it's going to be very special to finally be able to, finally be able to, because everybody knows how close we are, but like, it's weird because we've just been through so much and we always refer to each other as growing up together, because I mean, she was only 19 when she got pregnant with me, 20 when she had me. So like, she was still trying to figure out her life while raising me, while I was figuring out my life. So, I mean, we've been through constant situations to where, like, some good, some bad. So I think to just have that moment to be able to share with each other is going to be really, really good. So number two for me, the mother-son dance.
Yeah, well, my number two is right there. Same. Dad-daughter dance. I mean, look, I don't know any other way to say it. I mean, from the second I found out that Emily was coming, my heart belonged to her. It will always belong to her. She will always be the focal point of my life and the center of my universe. And much like you, you know, it hasn't always been easy. Our relationship has always been solid, but we have gone through ups and downs in life, you know, and we've gone through a lot of things together, and I've gone through a lot of different things in my life, but my one constant that was always there was Emily. And it's the reminder of no matter what I was going through, it was going to be okay. And that even as often as I would fuck up, she was the bright reminder that I at least have always done one thing right. And that's Emily. And you know, so yeah, this dance is going to be a very special just moment for me. And it's just, you know, it's the moment where I feel like I can really just let her know that even though you're starting this new chapter, even though this is like, you know, kind of a thing, Dad's always going to be here. And you know, I'm always going to have your back, and I'm always going to, you know, support you. And I'm always going to just, and I'm tearing up right now. I am going to be a mess. I am going to be a mess, but I am literally crying. You can't see it, but I'm crying. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to the dad-daughter dance. It's gonna be good.
You're gonna need to have a handkerchief, man.
I got a pocket square, but yeah, I'm just gonna need, like I told you, man, it's gonna be a disaster.
That's funny. Well, my number one, I think, is definitely the biggest thing, obviously, and it's part of us actually getting married. So my number one is the vows, my vows specifically, because I always go for the tear jerk reactions, and obviously we're writers, so I'm very excited about people to hear them, but also at the same time, like, I just want her to hear them. That's all that matters. I'm gonna take everybody else out of the room, and like, she's the only one that I'll be focusing on. And I think, you know, to be able to finally, not even finally, but to be able to, you know, tell her how much I mean, or she means to me, and how much I love her in front of all the people that we know and love, I think is going to be so special. That's definitely going to be a highlight. And I mean, I'm trying to make them little tokens too, to where like, I'm going to go physically print out my vows, and I got a little design for the actual piece of paper that'll be on them, and then we can save them and all the fun stuff. But yeah, I'm super excited about it. I think they're going to be great. I've actually had these done for the last 4 months. So, I mean, I've gone back and looked at them every once in a while to be like, oh, I still like this? Okay, cool. So, yeah, I'm really excited about it. I'm really excited about it. And I may or may not mention Gilmore Girls and Friends in my vows.
Okay, yeah, yeah. No, that's good. It only makes sense. It only makes sense. My number one is, I think, what every dad's dream is when you have a daughter, when you find out you have a daughter coming and everything, and that's to eventually know that at some point you are going to walk your daughter down the aisle and give her away. And I think it's one of the most special moments in a dad-daughter relationship. And you know, it's the much like I said with the dad-daughter dance of the always being there and, you know, always going to have your back kind of thing. It's the official handoff. And, you know, it's a very an emotional moment, you know. But, again, like I said, it's just something that you know you is going to come. It's going to happen eventually. It's what you hope to happen for your daughter. You want her to find the person that's going to treat her the way you treat her and treasure her the way that you treasure her, and knowing that you get to walk her down the aisle and to give her away to somebody that you know is going to do that is a special moment. And so yeah, my number one is walking her down the aisle, which is again going to be a mess. I hope there's some sort of waterproof stuff going down the aisle. She's it's gonna just, if I can make it all the way down without crying, if this was a sports book, you guys should bet on tears. You'd win big. I'm just gonna tell you right now. But I don't know. I was joking the other day. I don't know if I can do the fake rehearsal dinner walk without just busting into tears. It's just that's. I'm so emotional right now. I'm so emotional about everything. But yeah, my number one, walking down the aisle. It's gonna be amazing.
That's right. That's right. Well, if any of you out there actually know us individually and are coming to the wedding, please be sure to let us know what's your favorite part for the wedding weekend that you're looking forward to. I think that's fun.
Yeah.
If not, you know, let us know some of your wedding memories. Let us know wedding memories that you have attended. I always think that's kind of fun, too.
Yeah.
Be sure to email us at info@crazyantmedia.com. Or you can go to our website, email us there, or comment in the YouTube comment section, or at us on X, Threads, all the good places. You know, we love hearing stories from different people, so it's a whole lot of fun.
For sure.
Now we're heading over to the box office recap. Number one, I mean, Kung Fu Panda did pretty well. I mean, they brought in about $58 million.
Yeah.
Dune Part 2 brought in $46 million. Really good movie. But it's fucking Star Wars. I'm just saying. It's a really good movie, but it's fucking Star Wars.
Sure.
Anyway. Number three is Imaginary with $9.9 million. Number four is Cabernini?
Cabrini.
Cabrini with $7.2 million. Number five, Bob Marley, One Love is still hanging in there with $4.1 million.
Yes.
I think this may be the last weekend for Kung Fu Panda to make some money because Ghostbusters is coming out the wedding weekend.
Yes.
So be sure to stay tuned for that. New movies that are coming out this weekend are Arthur the King. That's that Mark Wahlberg dog one.
Yep.
I really want to see that.
Yep.
Knox Goes Away.
That's State the one I'm mostly super excited about. That's the Michael Keaton one that he directs. So it's
cool.
He's directing it. Yeah. So it's basically he's like an assassin who's got dementia or Alzheimer's and he's losing his shit. He doesn't remember anything. And he's being tasked for one more mission to get somebody out of trouble. Like, do you want an assassin that doesn't remember? I don't know. But yeah, so I'm excited. You guys know I'm like all in on Keaton's big revival and resurgence. And like, you know, I love the skit with him as Batman at the Oscars, all that. So I'm excited about that one. Knox Goes Away.
For sure. State of Consciousness. French Girl, An Irish Wish, select theaters near you, possibly. Movies you can still go see, The Beekeeper, Argyle, The Chosen, Ordinary Angels, Love Lies Bleeding, and all the other ones I had mentioned before.
Yes.
And heading over to the IMDb Pro's top trending segment, of course, Dune Part 2 is still the trending movie. Shogun has made its way into the trending show.
Yes.
And Rebecca Ferguson is the trending star. So rockin' and rolling, man. Rockin' and rolling.
Yo, for sure. I want to get everybody on Shogun on this show as a guest. I love them. They're all killing it. I love that show. So good.
Yeah, man. Definitely. We got to thank our guest one more time, Ashley Verscher, for coming on the show. She is absolutely amazing. Be sure to check out This Is Me Now on Amazon Prime. And you can follow her at Ashley Verscher, I think. She made it really easy. And be sure to follow the company and podcast on social media at Crazy Ant Media and at ItCap Podcast. And then, of course, follow our other podcast, Everything's OKP, on Instagram, Twitter, X and Threads. So be sure to do that. Like I said, we've got a new episode coming out next Wednesday. It's a snippet. It's a bite size, but man, oh man, if you want to get a little bit more behind the scenes of the wedding, I may or may not be ranting about some stuff. Be sure to listen to that. And be sure to follow us both personally on social media, myself at J Logan Austin and
at Crazy Ant CEO.
That's right. And subscribe to this podcast anywhere you listen to your podcast. Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play Music, iHeartRadio, Podbean, Stitcher, and so much more. And be sure to like this video on YouTube, subscribe to the channel, and ring the bell for all the latest and greatest notifications coming out of Crazy Ant Media.
Yes.
And then, of course, you can head over to our website, www.crazyantmedia.com, where you can start rocking the latest and greatest Crazy Ant Media gear. But man, oh man, I mean, what a great episode. It's going to be weird not doing this for a couple weeks. It always is, but it's always very refreshing. But we're super excited to come back, and we have some amazing guests lined up. So I'm really excited for all that, but I'm really excited for the wedding, man. I mean, it's going to be crazy.
I mean, yeah, look, it's it's all about life, man. It's all about life. We got weddings and movies and Oscars and, like, you know, it's just it's an amazing time to be alive. And yeah, it's going to be a fun 2 weeks. It's not going to be a boring 2 weeks off. It's going to be an amazing 2 weeks, and memories are going to be made, and lives are going to be just, like, full of excitement and joy and love. And it's going to be an amazing thing. And then to know that we have all that, and then we get to dive right back into what we love. And like you said, we're coming back to this stuff, but then, guys, it's full on production. We're going deep and right into development and pre-production on all of our projects. We got a bunch of stuff coming up. We are a film company, and we got a bunch of stuff coming before the end of the year, and we're so super excited about that. So it's already been a great start to the year. It's going to be a great couple of weeks with the wedding and everything that's going on, and then it's going to just be an amazing full-on end to the year. I'm loving life right now, man. I'm loving life.
Killing it, man. We're killing it. And you know who else is killing it?
Always.
Everywhere and anywhere, because she's talking about her Weight Watcher shit right now. But the one, the only,
Oprah! Oprah!